Dan Olson-Bang. You're listening to Syracuse University Gradcast. Today, I'm joined by Ariel Ashakor. Ariel is a biomedical engineer at the FDA and currently serving as a team lead there. Thank you very much for joining me, Ariel. I think that I'm really excited about this conversation, and we've known each other for a long time, and you have a path that I think is really important and interesting, and I'm glad you're here to share that with us.
Thank you for having me today, Dan. It's really great to be here. I'm super excited to talk to you, and it's good to always catch up with an old friend. So happy to be here.
Thanks so much. Why don't we start off with you telling us a bit about your experience of grad school and, you know, what you studied and how your time in grad school contributed to the work you do now?
Okay, sure. My degree at Syracuse University for my PhD is in bioengineering or biomedical engineering, and I am a biomedical engineer now at the FDA. But I would say that my thesis and the research that I did was more so fundamental science, and so it isn't directly relatable or applied to the work I do now that is specifically in interventional cardiovascular devices. But many of the tests and methods that I learned in completing my research as a part of my PhD program is used, or I use them in reviewing device submissions for the work that I do now.
You were also really involved. I think I met you through the Black Graduate Student Association.
Yeah.
You did kind of a lot of stuff. I think you were in WISE. Tell me about some of that stuff and you know, kind of the impact of that for you.
Oh, yeah. That was like the best part for me. It was really important for me to find a home at Syracuse. And when I visited, I felt like I could find a home there because there were other students on the campus that looked like me. And when I was visiting other campuses, I wanted to make sure that I did see that because I want an environment that's, you know, diverse and inclusive. I was involved in the recreation of the Black Grad Student Association. There was also a multicultural graduate student orientation program where I met a lot of my friends in my first year, and they're still my friends to this day, but also really supportive in helping to navigate the PhD program. And then there was also the Women of Color in STEM group that I was involved in as a mentor for undergraduate women of color in STEM. Also another important support group and a really important part of Syracuse University, I would say, a benefit in going to that university. And then outside of that, I did some extra community outreach work as a part of my fellowship for my PhD program.
Sounds like, you know, there's the courses we take and the lab work we do, and then there's the connections you make and the way that you contribute to a community and also receive from the community that counts for a lot.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's probably it's so important because getting a PhD is an endurance test. It's not just, you know, are you intelligent? It's really a matter of, can you stick this out and, you know, do this research for a really long time? And to be in a place that's away from home, I feel like you need to have something that will help you as a part of self-care, as a part of your mental health, to have the endurance to complete a PhD program.
Obviously, those connections you made were helpful and probably helped you to transition from grad school. And I'm wondering about the moment when you say, okay, now I need to get a job. What did that look like? What kind of positions were you thinking about? in general, just tell us about the path you took that led to the FDA.
Yes, this is a great question. I think that, you know, in a PhD program, you are encouraged to look at academic positions. And I was definitely looking into those options and other postdoctorate programs. So in searching for a job, I would say I started out maybe 6 months, I want to say, or 9 months in advance of my defense date. And because of my previous connection to FDA, I wanted to reapply there. I already kind of knew that. So I was applying to a lot of different jobs online, including my current role, as well as applying to other fellowships for postdoctorate programs. In the end, or at the final moment when it came time to defend my thesis, I had two career options that I was really looking at. And that was a NSF-funded postdoctoral program at MIT, or the position that I have now. And I can go into like why I chose FDA over MIT, which my dad still thinks I'm crazy for doing, but
you went to the federal government for the huge pay, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think
you should delve into that. I'd be curious to know the thought process. I think everybody wants to know how people make decisions that are at this level of momentousness.
Yeah, I mean, my deciding factors were quite personal. I was also thinking about, you know, career path and considering what are my work-life balance and what my life would look like as a professor versus pursuing industry and government. And I also thought about, you know, in the future, I could always return to academia. So that's another option. For me, it came down to, could I continue doing research, and would I be happy doing research for an additional 3 years after doing it for 5+ years, or really, you know, kind of most of my undergraduate and graduate life? And at the end of the day, I felt like I needed a transition. I was kind of tired of doing research work. And I also was tired of the snow. and so going from Syracuse to Boston did not really seem attractive to me. And then also there were personal reasons. My family is more close to the FDA campus, and I wanted to be closer to family and friends again. So I thought about that, in addition to, you know, the fact that I can always return to academia at a later time, and went with the role that I have now.
I think people don't really talk enough about their need to live in particular places as deciding factors. People talk as if the prestige of an institution or the alignment with a career, they talk like that's the only thing that you should make a decision based on. And I think that's unfortunate, because people want to live in certain places and near certain people. And that is not some kind of an outlandish wish. And I think in academia, all too often, people brush that aside. MIT, the opportunity of your life. And even if you said, hey, I want to be a professor, I think you would still be excused if you said, I want to be a professor, but I don't want to be in Boston, and you made other choices. And I think that it's important to validate that, because those are very real reasons why people make decisions.
I agree. I think that location is a lot more important than what you would imagine or what people tell you in terms of determining what to do for next steps. I talked about this with my friends, including NECA, who was also on the podcast. And we were discussing how, you know, we wouldn't likely consider or want to work at some universities in some cities if there aren't people who look like us, or if we I mean, just with racial tensions in the United States, there's some places I wouldn't want to live, you know, political reasons or otherwise. But definitely, I would say location is an important deciding factor in making your decision for a career.
As you kind of think about this transition time and moving into the FDA, what was it like to start your program, and you know, how have you found the adjustment, I guess I would say, to being there? How has that been moving from academia and then into the government?
I would say it was a fairly easy transition with all of the training that they give you. And you're applying, you know, a lot of the knowledge from your educational background in the role. So it was a nice change of pace, honestly. It was kind of nice, like I said, to not be in the lab anymore. You know, can work from home now, which turned out to be very important, as you know, when the pandemic happened. But I would say the transition was nice. It was easy.
That's great. I don't know that everybody would say that. Some people feel more uncertain about the pace of things, and a lot of people kind of enjoy shifting out of academia. I suspect that many of the people who end up outside of academia really wanted that outcome. It sounds like that's a decision that you certainly made along the way.
Yeah, and I would also say that you do have to, well, in my role, we have to do a lot of writing. And so deficiency writing, it was an easy transition from that to my current role, because at this point, all I'm doing is reading and writing. So,
you know, great time to ask. Tell us about that. Tell us about the role. What is it that a person like you does?
Yeah. So as a biomedical engineer in the Center for Devices and Radiological Health in the Office of Product Evaluation and Quality,
That's, by the way, quite a... quite a description of a place.
Oh, you know, the government loves their acronyms for things. Yeah. So there's a million fancy names for offices, including team names. I'm on the plaque modification devices team. Why does it have to be described so long? I'm not sure, but hey.
And you don't mean teeth. You mean plaque as in your vein.
Artery.
Right?
Yeah, artery. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I was like, is this dentistry?
I don't know who comes up with the names, but they're always quite long and everyone just tries to shorten it. I as a biomedical engineer, I have to review submissions, pre-market submissions from medical device companies to bring their devices to market. So that would include submissions to grant clinical trials, as well as just complete marketing of the device. And it depends on the class of device that determines what type of information is provided. But essentially, I review test reports as an engineer. And then outside of that role as a lead reviewer or acting team lead, the other position that I'm in now, we have to lead a lot of multidisciplinary teams in making the final regulatory decision. We meet with companies to give them guidance to prepare those submissions. And we also look at the total product life cycle. So what that means is we're also looking at reports after the device comes to market. They're called adverse event reports or medical device reports. Sure. And as well as inspection reports. So That's what I was working on just a second ago. And, you know, the outcome of an inspection report would be potentially a warning letter, where you would have to tell a medical device company, here are things that you need to improve upon, to make sure that your quality system or whatever it is sufficient to make the product that you're intending to market. So basically, we look at all parts of bringing a medical device to market, and we have to lead teams in deciding if that device is safe and effective for use in patients.
When you say these devices, you mean surgical devices for heart health, or is that about right? Am I getting this?
No, you're close. So it is, I work specifically on interventional cardiovascular devices or the plaque modification devices, which would include things like drug-eluting stents, drug-coated balloons, catheters that go into your arteries. There are other devices called thrombectomy devices or atherectomy devices, and they range in all types of varieties, where it can include a laser, for example, to ablate the plaque in your arteries, or some other mechanical component that's sanding away at the plaque in your arteries. And then sometimes it's also a vacuum or some type of suction device that is removing thrombus or plaque in your arteries. Those are the type of devices that I review, but obviously at the FDA and in the Center for Devices and Radiological Health, we have offices that cover each type of device, and that's how all the offices are broken down into based on devices, medical devices.
Wow. Yeah. When you were in grad school or maybe at another point in your life, I don't know, did you have a wish to work on kind of cardiovascular related things? Was that in your mind? How did that come about?
No, not at all. I think, it's funny because in undergrad, I actually worked on drug delivery nanoparticles. So creating those and characterizing the drug release. And then I did an internship at the FDA where we were also looking at drug release, but for stents. And then simply because of my experience on something else, it was able to be transferable to another application. Similar for my PhD work, you know, I worked on coatings, but not necessarily, coatings for cardiovascular devices, but that information can be applied. And that's, I kind of just ended up back in cardiovascular devices because of my previous experience with cardiovascular devices as an undergrad when I was an intern doing research at the FDA.
Okay. Not entirely random, not pick a field out of a hat and that's what you're doing.
Yeah, no, not too random, but definitely did not plan this at all.
Yeah. It sounds like fascinating work.
I'd say so. I mean, sometimes, you know, it gets a little bit mundane and there's definitely some tedious and I guess boring things like with any job, but sure. Yeah, it's very important work. And I like my job because of the impact on society and the importance of the work. So,
yeah. Well, here you are. I'm wondering, given your experience and your kind of positionality now, if you have any advice for a current grad student or postdoc.
Yes. Similar to the themes that we discussed today, I would say finding a support system is very important and making sure you're in an environment that supports you and you have an advisor that supports you. And then I think that's important not only for, you know, your PhD, but as well as your work environment. I've been successful in finding that, but I am the type of person who looks for it or creates it if it's not there. So for example, like right now we are creating a Woman of Color in STEM employee resource group at the FDA. So I'm very excited about that. My other advice to people, I guess, to graduate students, would be to create the environment if it isn't there, if it isn't possible, or to find that environment virtually if you have to. And then my other piece of advice would be when you're in your graduate field or graduate studies in your program, definitely you would want to apply early for positions, you know, look a year out, especially for government positions. It can take a long time to get hired. But I would also look at positions even earlier than that, so that you make sure that you have the skills that are directly needed for the roles that you need. So for example, just because I'm a biomedical engineer does not mean that I'm qualified to do PCR analytics or something. And that's like a specific technique for gene splicing. I honestly don't know all the details of it, but it's obviously something I don't know, but could be something that, you know, companies are looking for, people with experience in this area with degrees of biology or biomedical engineering. But if I don't have that practical experience in exactly the role that I'm looking for, then I'm not going to get hired. So I would definitely look at job descriptions throughout your graduate career. And if it's possible to learn new techniques, microscopy techniques or different testing techniques, whatever it is that's needed for the job of your dreams, pursue those things, you know, throughout your career to make yourself a more attractive or qualified candidate.
Those are excellent suggestions. And I especially appreciate you saying start early. I don't always find that to be the case, but a lot of people know to do that. But these things always take longer than you think. And do it from a position, I would say, also of just of being in a program where it's easy to explain to someone what you're doing, rather than wait and say, I just finished a program. And they say, oh, what are you doing now? And you say, well, not much. I'm here interviewing with you. So I think that advice for just getting started early, and I think you also kind of a thread you have here is make opportunities and find community where you need it. And I think those are important things to highlight.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks so much for being with us today, Ariel. I appreciate, of course, catching up with an old friend. And I think that the ideas you have of starting early are so important. Of creating your own opportunities and making a path for yourself and finding community along the way is invaluable advice.
Yeah, it was so great to catch up with you today, Dan. Thank you so much again for having me on the GradCast.
Thanks to all who are listening. This is Syracuse University GradCast.